Chapter 16. Away on the check rope, a new 6-inch hawser that forward there they had no chance to ease it round in time, and it parted. I saw the broken end fly up high in the air, and the next moment, that brute brought her quarter against the pier head with a jar that staggered everybody about her decks. She didn't hurt herself. Not she. But one of the boys the mate had sent aloft on the mizzen to do something came down on the poop deck thump right in front of me. He was not much older than myself. We had been grinning at each other only a few minutes before. He must have been handling himself carelessly, not expecting to get such a jerk. I heard his startled cry oh, in a high treble as he felt himself going, and looked up in time to see him go limp all over as he fell. Oh. Poor father was remarkably white about the gills when we shook hands in Gravesend. Are you all right? Apostrophe he says, looking hard at me. Yes, father. Apostrophe quite sure? Yes, father. Apostrophe well, then goodbye, my boy. Apostrophe he told me afterwards that for half a word he would have carried me off home with him there and then. I am the baby of the family, you know, added the man in tweeds, stroking his mustache with an ingenuous smile. I acknowledged this interesting communication by a sympathetic murmur. He waved his hand carelessly. This might have utterly spoiled a chap's nerve for going aloft, you know, utterly. He fell within 2 feet of me, cracking his head on a mooring bit. Never moved. Stone dead. Nice looking little fellow, he was. I had just been thinking we would be great chums. However, that wasn't yet the worst that brute of a ship could do. I served in her 3 years of my time, and then I got transferred to the Lucy Apps for a year. The sailmaker we had in the Apps family turned up there too, and I remember him saying to me one evening, after we had been a week at sea, "Isn't she a meek little ship?" ... No wonder we thought the Lucy Apps a dear, meek little ship, after getting clear of that big, rampaging savage brute. It was like heaven. Her officers seemed to me the restfulest lot of men on earth. To me who had known no ship, but the Apps family, the Lucy was like a sort of magic craft that did what you wanted her to do of her own accord. One evening we got caught aback pretty sharply from right ahead. In about 10 minutes we had her full again, sheets aft, tacks down, decks cleared, and the officer of the watch leaning against the weather rail peacefully. It seemed simply marvelous to me. The other would have stuck for half an hour in irons, rolling her decks full of water, knocking the men about, spars cracking, braces snapping, yards taking charge, and a confounded scare going on aft, because of her beastly rudder, which as he had a way of flapping about fit, to raise your hair on end. I could ... get over my wonder for days. Well, I finished my last year of apprenticeship in that jolly little ship. She wasn't so little either, but after that other heavy devil she seemed but a plaything to handle. I finished my time and passed. And then just as I was thinking of having 3 weeks of real good time on shore, I got at breakfast a letter asking me the earliest day I could be ready to join the Apps family as third mate. I gave my plate a shove that shot it into the middle of the table. Dad looked up over his paper, Mother raised her hands in astonishment, and I went out bareheaded into our bit of garden, where I walked round and round for an hour. When I came in again, Mother was out of the dining room, and Dad had shifted berth into his big armchair. The letter was lying on the mantelpiece. It's very creditable to you to get the offer, and very kind of them to make it, ... he said. And I see also that Charles has been appointed chief mate of that ship for one voyage. ... There was, overleaf, A.P. SS to that effect in Mr. Apps's own handwriting, which I had overlooked. Charlie was my big brother. I don't like very much to have two of my boys together in one ship, ... Father goes on, in his deliberate, solemn way. And I may tell you that I would not mind writing Mr. Apps a letter to that effect. ... Dear old Dad. He was a wonderful father. What would you have done? The mere notion of going back, and as an officer to be worried and bothered, and kept on the jump night and day by that brute, made me feel sick. But she wasn't a ship you could afford to fight shy of. Besides, the most genuine excuse could not be given without mortally offending absent sons. The firm, and I believe the whole family down to the old unmarried aunts in Lancashire, had grown desperately touchy about that accursed ship's character. This was the case for answering ready now from your very deathbed, if you wish to die in their good graces. And that's precisely what I did answer by wire, to have it over, and done with at once. The prospect of being shipmates with my big brother cheered me up considerably, though it made me a bit anxious too. Ever since I remember myself as a little chap, he had been very good to me, and I looked upon him as the finest fellow in the world. And so he was. No better officer ever walked the deck of a merchant ship. And that's a fact. He was a fine, strong, upstanding, sun-tanned, young fellow, with his brown hair curling a little, and an eye like a hawk. He was just splendid. We hadn't seen each other for many years, and even this time, though he had been in England 3 weeks already, he hadn't showed up at home yet, but had spent his spare time in Surrey somewhere macking up to Maggie Colchester, old Captain Colchester's niece. Her father, a great friend of Dad's, was in the sugar broking business, and Charlie made a sort of second home of their house. I wondered what my big brother would think of me. There was a sort of sternness about Charlie's face which never left it, not even when he was larking in his rather wild fashion. He received me with a great shout of laughter. He seemed to think my joining as an officer the greatest joke in the world. There was a difference of 10 years between us, and I suppose he remembered me best in pinafores. I was a kid of 4 when he first went to sea. It surprised me to find how boisterous he could be. "Now we shall see what you are made of," apostrophe he cried. And he held me off by the shoulders, and punched my ribs, and hustled me into his berth. "Sit down, Ned. I am glad of the chance of having you with me. I'll put the finishing touch to you, my young officer, providing you're worth the trouble. And, first of all, get it well into your head that we are not going to let this brute kill anybody this voyage. We'll stop her racket." Apostrophe, I perceived he was in dead earnest about it. He talked grimly of the ship, and how we must be careful and never allow this ugly beast to catch us napping with any of her damn tricks. He gave me a regular lecture on special seamanship for the use of the Yap's family, then changing his tone, he began to talk at large, rattling off the wildest, funniest nonsense, till my sides ached with laughing. I could see very well he was a bit above himself with high spirits. It couldn't be because of my coming. Not to that extent. But, of course, I wouldn't have dreamt of asking what was the matter. I had a proper respect for my big brother, I can tell you. But it was all made plain enough a day or two afterwards, when I heard that Miss Maggie Colchester was coming for the voyage. Uncle was giving her a sea trip for the benefit of her health. I don't know what could have been wrong with her health. She had a beautiful color, and a deuce of a lot of fair hair. She didn't care a rap for wind, or rain, or spray, or sun, or green seas, or anything. She was a blue-eyed, jolly girl of the very best sort, but the way she cheeked my big brother used to frighten me. I always expected it to end in an awful row. However, nothing decisive happened till after we had been in Sydney for a week. One day, in the men's dinner hour, Charlie sticks his head into my cabin. I was stretched out on my back on the settee, smoking in peace. "Come ashore with me, Ned," apostrophe he says, in his curt way. I jumped up, of course, and away after him down the gangway, and up George Street. He strode along like a giant, and I at his elbow, panting. It was confoundedly hot. "Where on earth are you rushing me to, Charlie?" apostrophe I made bold to ask. "Here," apostrophe he says. Here was a jeweler's shop. I couldn't imagine what he could want there. It seemed a sort of mad freak. He thrusts under my nose three rings, which looked very tiny on his big, brown palm, growling out, "For Maggie." Which? Apostrophe, I got a kind of scare at this. I couldn't make a sound, but I pointed at the one that sparkled white and blue. He put it in his waistcoat pocket, paid for it with a lot of sovereigns, and bolted out. When we got on board, I was quite out of breath. "Shake hands, old chap," apostrophe I gasped out. He gave me a thump on the back. "Give what orders you like to the boatswain." When the hands turn to, apostrophe says he, "I am off duty this afternoon." Apostrophe, then he vanished from the deck for a while, but presently he came out of the cabin with Maggie, and these two went over the gangway publicly, before all hands, going for a walk together on that awful, blazing hot day, with clouds of dust flying about. They came back after a few hours looking very staid, but didn't seem to have the slightest idea where they had been. Anyway, that's the answer they both made to Mrs. Colchester's question at tea time. And didn't she turn on Charlie, with her voice like an old night cabman's? Rubbish. Don't know where you've been. Stuff and nonsense. You've walked the girl off her legs. Don't do it again. Apostrophe, it's surprising how meek Charlie could be with that old woman. Only on one occasion he whispered to me, "I'm jolly glad she isn't Maggie's aunt, except by marriage. That's no sort of relationship." Apostrophe, but I think he let Maggie have too much of her own way. She was hopping all over that ship in her yachting skirt, and a red tam-o'-shanter like a bright bird on a dead black tree. The old salts used to grin to themselves when they saw her coming along, and offered to teach her knots or splices. I believe she liked the men, for Charlie's sake, I suppose. As you may imagine, the fiendish propensities of that cursed ship were never spoken of on board. Not in the cabin, at any rate. Only once on the homeward passage Charlie said, incautiously, something about bringing all her crew home this time. Captain Colchester began to look uncomfortable at once, and that silly, hard-bitten old woman flew out at Charlie, as though he had said something indecent. I was quite confounded myself. As to Maggie, she sat completely mystified, opening her blue eyes very wide. Of course, before she was a day older, she wormed it all out of me. She was a very difficult person to lie to. "How awful," apostrophe she said. Quite solemn. "So many poor fellows. I am glad the voyage is nearly over. I won't have a moment's peace about Charlie now." Apostrophe, apostrophe, I assured her Charlie was all right. It took more than that ship knew to get over a seaman like Charlie. And she agreed with me. Next day we got the tug off Dungeness. And when the tow rope was fast, Charlie rubbed his hands and said to me in an undertone, "We've baffled her, Ned." Apostrophe, apostrophe, looks like it, apostrophe I said, with a grin at him. It was beautiful weather, and the sea as smooth as a millpond. We went up the river without a shadow of trouble except once, when off Hole Haven, the brute took a sudden sheer, and nearly had a barge anchored just clear of the fairway. But I was aft, looking after the steering, and she did not catch me napping that time. Charlie came up on the poop, looking very concerned. "Close shave," apostrophe says he. "Never mind, Charlie," apostrophe I answered, cheerily. "You've tamed her." Apostrophe, apostrophe, we were to tow right up to the dock. The river pilot boarded us below Gravesend, and the first words I heard him say were, "You may just as well take your port anchor inboard at once, Mr. Mate." Apostrophe, apostrophe, this had been done when I went forward. I saw Maggie on the forecastle head enjoying the bustle, and I begged her to go aft, but she took no notice of me, of course. Then Charlie, who was very busy with the headgear, caught sight of her, and shouted in his biggest voice, "Get off the forecastle head, Maggie! You're in the way here!" Apostrophe, apostrophe, for all answer she made a funny face at him, and I saw poor Charlie turn away, hiding a smile. She was flushed with the excitement of getting home again, and her blue eyes seemed to snap electric sparks as she looked at the river. A collier brig had gone round just ahead of us, and our tug had to stop her engines in a hurry to avoid running into her. In a moment, as is usually the case, all the shipping in the reach seemed to get into a hopeless tangle. A schooner and a ketch got up a small collision all to themselves right in the middle of the river. It was exciting to watch, and, meantime, our tug remained stopped. Any other ship than that brute could have been coaxed to keep straight for a couple of minutes, but not she. Her head fell off at once, and she began to drift down, taking her tug along with her. I noticed a cluster of coasters at anchor within a quarter of a mile of us, and I thought I had better speak to the pilot. If you let her get amongst that lot, I said, quietly, she will grind some of them to bits before we get her out again. Don't I know her? Cries he, stamping his foot in a perfect fury. And he out with his whistle to Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.